Major support for Louisiana Eats on WWNO provided by Zatarain's, proud producers of authentic New Orleans-style cuisine. Zatarain's, a New Orleans tradition since 1889.
From WWNO New Orleans, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. Culinary icon Leah Chase has been many things over her lifetime, including a passionate collector of African-American art. Now, Leah herself is the subject of a new collection of paintings by New Orleans artist Gus Bloch. Gus tells us about his artistic muse, Leah, and the big plans ahead for the collection. Louisiana Blue Crabs have also provided many a chef with artistic inspiration. Now, our fishery is getting new worldwide attention after receiving sustainable certification. Rusty Godet of Louisiana's Sea Grant program is here to explore the future of our favorite crustacean. Stay tuned for this week's Louisiana Eats. Louisiana artist Gustave Bloch III spent the last couple of years with Chef Leah Chase as his muse. The collection of paintings that were inspired by this experience are about to go on display at the New Orleans Museum of Art, with one piece traveling on later this year to the permanent collection of the National Portrait Gallery in Washington, D.C. Gus, welcome to Louisiana Eats.
Oh, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
How were you inspired to create this new body of work?
Well, my art representative, Eugene Desmuid, presented me with the idea. I was working on another project at the time in mid-2009, and he was dining at Dickie Chase's, the night Michael Jackson passed, and for some reason it just clicked. And so he called me and said, listen, I think I might have something for you. You know, I said, well, what is it? What do you think about documenting Leah Chase? I said, sold. I'm done. I said, I was working on a very important project in New York. I dropped it at the drop of a hat, unfortunately. I don't think my dealer is speaking to me still for that, actually. But I was head over heels, and so he made the introduction. And she did know a lot of my family and actually knew of my artwork. And from there, we planned a schedule for me to work with her on a kind of a quarterly basis, where I'd come into town, I would shoot photo reference of her and also do sketches in the kitchen of her. And I told her I wanted to do the behind-the-scenes aspect of Dickie Chase Restaurant. Not that people haven't been in her kitchen before, but using the medium of oil paint was a, you know, great excuse to get back there and, I guess, highlight the unseen aspects of what Miss Chase does in the kitchen before it comes to the table.
And what does Dickie Chase Restaurant mean to you?
Well, I mean, it's one of the historic institutions, not just for Louisiana in New Orleans, but nationally, for what it's meant to the civil rights movement and actually what it meant to my grandparents is where their first date was. I think we all can share in those experiences of going and dining at Dickie Chase's. I know my mom, my grandparents all have stories, and I'm pretty sure all of the New Orleans communities, moms and grandparents, fathers, uncles, cousins, all have similar stories. So we can all share in that experience. And I think that's why this show has seemed to have brought the whole New Orleans community together.
And how is this work different from your earlier art?
Well, I do work in series. And in a previous series called The Mop Makers, I actually went to the Lighthouse of the Blind and documented visibly impaired workers, and they made mops and brooms from scratch. So I do try and find subjects where I can at least bring attention to a subject. But the one difference with this one is that I wasn't bringing any attention to Miss Chase. It's probably the reverse. But I wanted to find that one nuance, that one thing that maybe the public doesn't know. So that was my avenue in.
What do you think you're showing us that we haven't seen before? What surprising images are we going to find?
I think, for one, I think people will be surprised that Miss Chase, you know, gets there 8 in the morning. She's doing her prep work at her age. And a lot of the series behind the scenes is capturing her doing some of that prep. The picture that's featured at the National Portrait Gallery that'll be there after September features her cutting squash. And then there's other where she's cutting scallions and pouring parsley. And all, you know, she's getting prepared. So I think that's one, I think, nuance that people don't see or know, that she's there that early.
They probably think somebody else is in there doing the chopping, but it's
that
Leah.
The squash magically gets cut. No, it doesn't come cut.
So how did the National Portrait Gallery invitation come to be?
Again, my rep, Eugene Desmute, reached out to the curator at the National Portrait Gallery and sent him the painting and information on what we were doing. And immediately he responded and thought, you know what, we need to have this painting or one of these paintings from the series at the National Portrait Gallery. Knowing who Miss Chase is and what she represents, I'd imagine also for Miss Chase, it's got to be a great honor.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. She's very tickled, even though she was disappointed that she couldn't make her look more like Halle Berry.
She's shared that with me plenty of times. Miss Chase, she's not the only one who probably would want to look like Halle Berry.
I was fascinated to learn that several years ago, you went from painting large canvases to a smaller format. Explain that, and what is the actual size of these Dickie Chase paintings?
Well, when I was an undergrad, I was working 4 by 7 feet. I mean, I started doing these life-size paintings, and when I went to graduate school, I was working on one large portrait, and my thesis I thought was going to be these series of large paintings, you know. But then I was taking a class, and of course, being a student, you know, in New York, rent's high, materials are high. I started taking random boards that people would cut and leave off. They would cut, you know, very large boards, and I'd have these scraps left over. So I would then prepare those boards just to take in the class. I figured I was just going to do studies anyway. What would be the point of going and buying something? So I started there. So these miniature boards I would take in the class, and then I would paint, you know, whether it be still life or if we had a model in class. Crowds would come around and stand behind me, and they really loved this unique format. So I guess maybe I'm just a person of extremes. I go from this extremely large format to this extremely small format. And the show for Dickie Chase is indicative of that, because all the pictures are 16 by 13 and smaller.
How interesting. Now, Leah is planning quite a party for this exhibit's opening. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, there will be a gala at the New Orleans Museum of Art Monday, April 23rd, between 6 and 8. And tickets are on sale now at NOMA. They're $75 a ticket, but it goes towards the Leah Chase Art Fund.
100% of the proceeds are going towards that. And really, how inspirational for your work to inspire a fund for African-American art that's going to be in Leah's name at NOMA, because she's been such a valuable member of the art community. She's a trustee there. Mm-hmm. This is really something special.
Well, for Miss Chase, I mean, she's been a collector of African-American art for years now. If you go into a restaurant in the dining rooms, you can see, you know, her collection on display. So I think when we introduced this project to her, there was an instant connection. You know, in a way, it was two art worlds meeting. One art world she really appreciated, and now she gets to see herself in that art world. Trust me, I won't be the one cooking a large or catering gumbo for a large.
Well, I hear she
it
is
won't
doing
go the other way.
But she's doing all the cooking, right?
She's going to cater the event on the 23rd. So, you know, it's just this great mix of arts and appreciation. And I think Miss Chase being at the center of it, we can't find a better, I think, ambassador in both worlds.
Come hungry,
come
right?
Come hungry, you know, don't eat before.
And tell me, will you be in Washington, D.C. when the portrait's unveiled there?
I plan on it. The show actually runs. It'll be open to the public April 24th. Through September 9th.
Here at NOMA.
At NOMA. But it will be up until September 9th. So once it comes down and the painting goes back to the National Portrait Gallery, I'm pretty sure they'll work out a schedule of when it will go on view and Trust me, I'll let you know.
Thank you so much for coming to tell us all this exciting news.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm happy to be here.
New Orleans artist Gustav Bloch III.
Train wheels are running through the back of my memory. When I ran on the hilltop following a pack of wild geese. Someday everything is gonna sound like a rhapsody. When I paint my masterpiece.
And now it's time for our Louisiana Eats Culinary Quiz Question of the Week. Brought to you with support from French Market Coffee. The answer to this week's question, what are the names of the intrepid road food reporters heard every week on The Splendid Table, are Jane and Michael Stern. Now let's see who this week's lucky winner is. Thomas Walsh, our Louisiana Eats producer, is manning the grinder.
After spending more than 30 years on the road, the Sterns have clearly amassed quite a devout group of fans. We had entries come in from all over the place. The North Shore, down the Bayou, and even from San Antonio, Texas. But our winner's from right here in the Crescent City. It's Mr. Jack Carrell of New Orleans. Send us in your response for a chance to win.
Our lucky winner will be receiving 3 full-size bags of French Market coffee, including dark roast with chicory, and French roast. This week's question is, what is the only certified sustainable fishery in Louisiana? Send your answers to Louisiana Eats at wwno.org by midnight Sunday night. All correct answers received will be mixed together in our French Market coffee grinder, and one lucky winner will be chosen at random and announced on next week's show. Again, this week's question is, what is the only certified sustainable fishery in Louisiana? Email those answers by midnight Sunday night to Louisiana Eats at wwno.org with culinary quiz in the subject line, and you could be next week's lucky winner. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats. In March, the international nonprofit Marine Stewardship Council designated Louisiana's blue crab fishery as certified sustainable. Joining us to explain what this very special distinction means to our state's 3,000-plus commercial crabbers is Rusty Godet, Area Coastal Fishery Agent for the LSU Ag Center and Louisiana Sea Grant Program. Rusty, welcome to Louisiana Eats.
I'm glad to be here, Poppy.
First, explain who the Marine Stewardship Council is.
The Marine Stewardship Council is a third-party certifier that actually looks at the statements that people make, or in this case the state makes, that want to do a verification of their either the industry or in some cases certification could be actually on the quality of the product.
What was the process of receiving the certification? How did that go?
The process of doing MSC certification is a very long process and in many ways is very costly also. But this was a initiative that was started by the crabbing industry itself. It was mentioned as a good thing for the industry because it would increase the attractiveness of our product, of the Louisiana product, and that there was no other blue crab industry in the world that was certified MSC sustainable.
And to get this certification, how long did it take? When did you begin the process?
Actually, almost 3 years ago, and it was proposed, as I said, to the Crab Task Force. Initially, it was privately funded by one of the processors because he thought it was a good thing for the not only for his business, but also for the state's product. And it kind of progressed along and kind of 2 steps forward, 1 step back. And eventually it got enough traction and enough momentum that it picked up additional funding and assistance from the Louisiana Wildlife and Fishery Department. And eventually, it just recently became officially certified.
Seafood that the Marine Stewardship Council certifies as sustainable actually receives a special blue eco label. So who's looking for that label? Who is that going to matter to?
Well, the use of that label is discretionary upon the vendor. You know, once a industry itself is certified as MSC sustainable, then the use of the eco label is, as I said, discretionary to the vendor if he or she wants to use that label on their product. In some cases, you can go to some of the better grocery stores in New Orleans here, and you can find a variety of MSC-certified seafood. It goes anything from finfish all the way down to now the Louisiana blue crab.
But looking at the big picture in the world, who is this going to matter to?
Well, MSC is a global certification process, and MSC has a lot of momentum and a lot of respect by the European community. Because of that, anybody who is marketing overseas and also on our home ground here, MSC is very, very recognized by some of the big chains like Walmart, Whole Foods, et cetera, et cetera.
Target and Costco, I understand, are in that too.
Well, and they're moving in a direction that will go in tiers, and they try to be, say, 40% MSC certified by a certain year, then 60%, then 80%, and eventually they want to be 100% MSC certified for their seafood. In other words, nothing would come in their doors to be sold unless it was MSC certified. So if Blue Crabs does not have this, then we would not have that opportunity to participate in that market.
And I know that this is very important to a lot of chefs' organizations, like Chefs Collaborative. Sustainability is a real hot-button issue.
Well, it's not just trendy. It's really the right thing to do. Just recently, I found out that the dining halls at University of California at Berkeley are all MSC certified. So they're using MSC certified products at the university dining halls. So, and they are the first university dining hall to be MSC certified.
So we are the only certified sustainable blue crab fishery in the world right now.
Yes, at this point, there's another state, Maryland, which is actually a blue crab producer of its own, the Chesapeake primarily, and this is the very same crab that we have here. This is the same genus, same species. And matter of fact, Maryland is very hot on the trail of the MSC certification also. So they are two steps behind us, but we can hear their footsteps running up.
Rusty, how do you think this is going to translate economically for both the state's crabbers and for blue crab consumers?
The thought is that this will give us a very strong foothold in the domestic market, but also in the European market, because the crab meat is being marketed overseas. And in the case of one product, as soon as it went MSC certified, within the next 6 months, its volume almost doubled.
Wow, that's
so
great.
So that's just for one product. I mean, we should be so fortunate to have that happen to us.
And what does this say for the health of our state's waters as we approach this second anniversary of the BP oil spill?
Well, for the water itself, for the habitat, you know, you're also certifying that the habitat is sufficient to sustain the population of whatever animal you're looking at. In our case, we're talking about the blue crab. So if the habitat was impaired, or if the habitat was not able to sustain the population of whatever animal, be it manatees or be it mermaids, you know, then it would not be deemed sustainable. And something would have to change. Either the harvest would have to change and drop down to allow for the habitat to recover, or something else would have to happen to qualify it as sustainable.
And I believe that there's more certification for wild-caught Louisiana seafood coming down the road. Could you tell us about that?
There's an internal effort to get some of the Louisiana seafood to be certified as authentic Louisiana and even premium Louisiana. Again, this is not a MSC certification. It's not a FAO certification. It's an internal state certification where we are policing our own people to make sure that the product that is being offered with this seal is indeed what it says.
Yeah, and it's really aimed at differentiating our product from imports.
Well, it's all about trust. It's all about, you know, when you get a MSC certified product, you expect X, Y, and Z. If you get a Louisiana certified product, you expect X, Y, and Z. And it's building the trust factor in the consuming public that this indeed has been scrutinized and you're in better shape buying this than you would be buying something else that has no oversight.
I want to thank you so much for demystifying this whole process for our Louisiana Eats listeners. Thank you, Rusty.
You're welcome.
Rusty Godet, Louisiana fishery expert. That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Next week, jewelry designer Thomas Mann and his culinary inspirations.
Well, you know, it all stems from a long interest in food and cooking on my part. You know, for 10 years, my brother Todd and I were partners in a natural food store, juice bar, and catering company in the Pocono Mountains in Pennsylvania.
Subscribe to our podcast, hear today's show, or catch up on previous editions anytime online at wwno.org. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from French Market Coffee and Zatarain's. Additional support provided by Dickie Brennan's Steakhouse, Palace Cafe, and the Bourbon House, Lightseek and Funeral Homes, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation, and our media sponsor, Louisiana Cookin' Magazine. Theme music by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes, produced at Piety Street Recording. I'm Poppy Tooker. We'll see you next time. Louisiana Eats is a production of WWNO.